Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm David Knight. It's Tuesday, December 4th, 2012. And here's what's coming up.
Tonight on the InfoWars Nightly News, police tell Congress to hand over your text messages. Then, the TSA seeks approval to conduct security assessments on highways. And Alex Jones says it's time to bench sportscasters who put the Second Amendment on injured reserve. All that and more coming up on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Well, by now I'm sure you've heard about Bob Costas's rant against the Second Amendment, his anti-Constitution rant. Well, the guy that he was quoting, Jason Whitlock, actually doubled down on his comments. And who is Jason Whitlock? Well, he's the guy that says the NRA is the KKK. Check out this video from Alex.
I knew they would do it. They said if we didn't want government-run health care with death panels, which they now admit we were racist. If you want freedom, you're a racist. It turns out the sports columnist that Bob Costas is quoting says that owning guns is racist and that the NRA is the new KKK. And here he is on sports radio today saying it. See, we don't want to give up our rights. We don't want to be slaves. We don't want to live in places like Chicago or New York where they have taken all the guns from the people, so they have really high crime. And we're racist. Now, that's why. Yes, yes, you heard it. It's used as a weapon. Listen to this crap.
In America's gun culture, I believe the NRA is the new KKK.
Wow.
And that the arming of so many black youth and loading up our communities with drugs and then just having an open shooting gallery is the work of people that, you know, obviously don't have our best interest. And
I've listened to the full interview. You can go listen to it for yourself. This is incredible. And you're racist if you want the Second Amendment. And it's our fault there's a gangster culture in rap and pit bulls. And Michael Vick, I guess, did that with those dogs. It's our fault, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, it's Rob Dew right there here working at 8 o'clock at night. My fault. It's our fault because I don't want to turn my guns in because I'm racist. That's right. I mean, this is their religion, the Democratic Party, and I'm not even a Republican, but these people are sick, 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 and this is who Bob Costas quotes and agrees with. Unbelievable. Hey, what about the NFL player that was admittedly on all those psychotropic prescription drugs? What about all the concussions? No, it's guns and racist. This is divide and conquer crap, and I'm tired of your political correctness. They're even trying to ban Christmas all over the country now. Anything. It's all about control with you control freaks, because the globalists and their minions and the collectivists don't produce. And they want to get everybody in this country, no matter what color you are, who doesn't like big government, they want to say you're a racist with their political correctness. And it's really blowing up in their faces. They hate the gun culture because everybody's figuring out that guns means less crime. This guy looks like he's a little bit overweight. Should we ban spoons because that's what made him fat? I mean, unbelievable. Should we ban all dog ownership because Michael Vick mistreated dogs? That's how authoritarians work, ladies and gentlemen. They blame everybody around them. Everybody except the person that commits the crime is blamed, and everybody loses their rights collectively. Right there, ladies and gentlemen. PlanetInfoWars.com, InfoWars.com. Put on the glasses like they live. See the real world all around you. Incredible anti-gun sports columnist Jason Whitlock. The NRA is the new KKK. Folks, you've got to stand up against these people, these race pimps. Unbelievable, the scapegoating of our Second Amendment. You know this guy probably lives in a big mega urban center where they've banned guns. Unbelievable. Just these people. He's so brainwashed in that culture, he may actually think that the Second Amendment's racist. The Second Amendment, by the way, you know what's so rich about this? The first anti-gun laws in this country were passed after the Civil War when blacks gained their freedom so they couldn't own guns to protect themselves from the Ku Klux Klan. You are a piece of trash to your, quote, race. The human race, buddy. You are a joke and a race pimp. Hey, you know Hitler used race to manipulate people, claiming this group was racist, that group was racist, but he was going to protect the Germans. It's the same crap. You are a race pimp. You are a sicko. Unbelievable. Yeah, it's racist if blacks can get guns. Unbelievable. The KKK got the first gun laws passed. But he says if you're against more gun laws for law-abiding citizens, you're a racist. Go to hell, Whitlock. You're a sick joke. You freak. Why don't you move to North Korea? They don't let you own guns there, punk.
Would you catch that? He said that arming, I'm kind of paraphrasing him here, but he says arming of our black youths and loading up the community with drugs is creating a shooting gallery. Well, he's right about the war on drugs. The war on drugs is very racist, and prohibition creates a lot of violence. But that's not coming from private citizens. That's not coming from the NRA. That's coming from our government. You know, those are government policies, and he wants to give that same government that's created the racist war on drugs, that's created all the violence associated with prohibition. And remember, the prohibition associated, the violence associated with prohibition in the drug war is no different from the violence associated with prohibition and alcohol prohibition. But he wants to give the government that's created those policies, the government that brings the drugs into his neighborhoods, the CIA that sends those in, he wants to give that government a monopoly of force. He wants to have them be the only ones who have guns. Well, if you want to talk about racism and gun laws, the place you want to look at first is Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. In an article by Richard Stevens, he points out that free black people had honorably served with distinction in the Revolutionary War, yet in 1792, by federal law, black men could not serve as part of state militias. And in Louisiana, slaves were forbidden to use firearms, even in self-defense. Florida laws empowered white citizen patrols to invade and search blacks' homes for guns or other weapons. None of these policies, of course, applied to white people. But these gun control laws disarmed most black people, and the Ku Klux Klan and others could freely terrorize black families without fear. And that's exactly what they did. In an article from the Detroit Metro Times entitled Brothers in Arms, Detroit's last gun shop owner talks about what it's like how gun laws have been used against black people. He tells people, do you remember the case of Dr. Sweet? This was back in 1925. He was a black physician who, with his family, was tried and eventually acquitted for shooting into a mob that attacked their home when they moved into an all-white neighborhood. Soon after, the state passed stringent gun control laws known as Public Act 372 of the year 1927. And Laney, that's the fellow who, the black fellow who owns the gun shop, the last gun shop in Detroit, says these laws were aimed squarely at blacks and they were a reaction to the verdict. He said after the Sweet case, the Michigan legislature said we couldn't allow black people to have guns, and that's how Michigan gun laws came about. Gun control is race control. It's been that way to keep blacks in servitude. That's a black gun shop owner, Mr. Laney. And this last bit of news here, Martin Luther King and his guns. You may not know that in 1956, after Martin Luther King's house was bombed, he applied for a concealed carry permit in Alabama. The local police had the discretion to determine who was a suitable person to carry firearms, and although King was a clergyman whose life was threatened daily, you would think he would meet the requirements of the law, but no, he was rejected. He was rejected for a gun control permit. So, yes, there is a good deal of racism involved with guns, but it is on the side of regulation, and it has typically been used to put black people in jeopardy, not the way that Costas and Whitlock are talking. Now, along those lines, Alex, I'm sure you've seen, has called for a boycott of the NFL, the NBC, and Bob Costas. Now, Bob Costas says that he didn't hijack the NFL game show by talking about politics. Really? I think, in fact, he did. As a matter of fact, calls against, for his dismissal are not unjustified considering what happened to Hank Williams Jr. You know, he went on the Fox News political program and talked about his opinion of Obama, and he was not only fired, but his theme song from Monday Night Football was flushed down the memory hole. So, there seems to be, Bob Costas is looking for, I think, a little bit different standard. And also, he did this on a sports show. He's using sports for propaganda. And Alex has a great rant about that. Let's take a look at that.
People who have credibility with young people should be on the television telling these youngsters that it's wrong to carry a gun.
Ultimate tragedy, bloodied and dead. Javon Belcher's action, handguns do not enhance our safety.
And just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
The assault weapons ban made sense.
Well, the establishment's war against the right to keep and bear arms and the rest of our Bill of Rights is now reaching a high tide mark. And you can make no mistake, Bob Costas during Sunday Night Football on NBC was declaring war on the Second Amendment.
You want some actual perspective on this? Well, a bit of it comes from the Kansas City-based writer Jason Whitlock. Our current gun culture, Whitlock wrote, ensures that more and more domestic disputes will end in the ultimate tragedy, and that more convenience store confrontations over loud music coming from a car will leave more teenage boys bloodied and dead.
And make no mistake, he was reading off a teleprompter at that time, and his remarks had all been pre-approved.
Handguns do not enhance our safety. They exacerbate our flaws, tempt us to escalate arguments, and bait us into embracing confrontation rather than avoiding it.
Turning the NFL into even more of a propaganda tool of the authoritarians that control Washington, D.C.
If Javon Belcher didn't possess a gun, he and Cassandra Perkins would both be alive today.
Leave it to NBC and Bob Costas to take a tragic event and try to capitalize on it to destroy the Second Amendment of our Bill of Rights and Constitution. Coming out and blaming a tragic shooting on the Second Amendment is asinine. It's like blaming obesity on spoons and forks, but that's exactly what he did. Costas really thinks we're stupid when he says, you know, there's a gun culture in the NFL. You mean the thug culture that's in the NFL? Pit bull fights and all the rest of it? You mean that culture? They're trying to claim that the American gun culture is the thug culture that's in the NFL. Don't blame us for your culture of drugged out of their mind athletes on pain pills and psychotropic drugs like Prozac known to cause psychotic breaks, and men who have had concussions after concussions after concussions going home and killing their families. And you notice Bob Costas says, I know in the days to come the NFL may get blamed, but you can't deny it's guns. If there wouldn't have been guns, this wouldn't have happened. He's saying, let's blame the Second Amendment. Let's blame one of the few rights left in this country. Let's not blame the NFL and the decadent gladiatorial spectacle it's become. The bureaucracy that's hijacked this country admits they're coming after our firearms. They have told us that they are doing this.
Part of it is seeing if we can get an assault weapons ban reintroduced.
Obama, 4 years ago, told supporters that he doesn't like bitter clingers, people that cling to their Second Amendment.
No, it's not surprising then that they get bitter and they cling to guns or religion.
Think of how stupid the gun grabbers think you are. They point out the violence that's going on in the youth of this country in places like Chicago and New York that have the highest crime rates in the United States, where they've completely banned guns for the general public. And then they point at Chicago and New York and say that's the reason that we need to turn our guns in places like Texas.
Frankly, in my hometown of Chicago, there's an awful lot of violence. And they're not using AK-47s, they're using cheap handguns.
It's incredible. They take the guns, the crime rates explode in those areas, while the crime rates drop in areas all over the United States where you have a high rate of legal, lawful gun ownership. I expected the victim disarmament anti-defense crowd to come out and use this tragedy. But to see the NFL, NBC, via their frontman Bob Costas do it, lets you know that they are blowing the bugle, that they are charging in on our Second Amendment, and all the facts prove that that is what is now happening.
None of us are under any illusion that reinstating that ban would be easy. And so what we focused on is existing laws.
If the president would stage Fast and Furious, shipping guns into Mexico to demonize the Second Amendment and call for a gun ban, they will use any crisis out there to restrict our guns.
Trafficking illegal firearms, sending them across a border, is illegal. That's something that we can stop. And so our focus is to work with Secretary Napolitano, Attorney General Holder,
And now the reports are beginning to come out that Obama may use executive orders to restrict the Second Amendment because he can't get Congress to do it. He's already done that on cybersecurity. He's already done that shutting down power plants. He's already said NATO and the UN command our military. He is becoming a dictator more and more. They have asked the media to go out and blame everything on our right to keep and bear arms.
People who have credibility with young people should be on the television telling these youngsters that it's wrong to carry a gun.
So what you're seeing is part of the brainwashing that Attorney General Holder called for more than 15 years ago and is calling for again.
And just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
And the fact that Costas would be authorized to do something like this during Sunday football with the NFL lets you know they mean business. A corporate company man like Costas, you know he got it approved. So this is the NFL and NBC endorsing an attack on one of the few basic liberties that America has left. Unbelievably outrageous, and signals a coordinated attack on the Second Amendment. And if we won't speak out against this now, if we won't demand that Bob Costas at least apologize for using this tragedy, we're going to lose our Second Amendment. Now, Hank Williams Jr. said this country was turning into a dictatorship, and he was fired.
You mean when John Boehner played golf with President Obama?
Oh, yeah. It'd be like Hitler playing golf with Netanyahu, okay?
Okay.
Not hardly.
All we're asking for is that Bob Costas apologize and that the NFL repudiate what was said as well as NBC. But if that is not done, I promise you this, and over 150 million other gun owners in this country do as well. We are not going to rest until the NFL loses a large portion of their audience and NBC sponsors or boycotted. It's time to turn off the NFL. It's time to turn off NBC. And it's time to stop watching that little globalist front man, Bob Costas. It's time to take it personal when they try to take our guns. That's why I'm calling for everyone to mail spoons with a note explaining to NBC that blaming guns for crime is like blaming spoons for fat people. And it's time to mail Bob Costas spoons. We're going to put the address under this video in the links below. And it's time to call the sponsors of NBC and the NFL and to let them know you're not going to support them either. It's time for the American people to stand up. It's time for the sleeping giant that is the United States of America to rediscover the Bill of Rights and Constitution. These are our rights, and you are not going to steal them. Do you understand this? The Second Amendment is the line in the sand. I'm Alex Jones, signing off for InfoWars.com.
Well, it seems like every time they come for our liberty, they use our safety or our security as an excuse. And along those lines, we have a deputy police chief right here in Texas calling for permanent DWI checkpoints. That's right. He wants permanent DWI checkpoints in order to save lives. This is down in San Antonio, and the police there say that they want to set up permanent hotspots where they will check people, I guess, presumably close to bars and things. But this is nothing more than just a violation of our Fourth Amendment. And it has a special problem in San Antonio because San Antonio enforces a no-refusal blood draw. That means that you can't refuse a breathalyzer test. So Texans could find themselves with a needle stuck in their arm for simply exercising their right to mobility. This is something that I find particularly obnoxious, because they're not going to get me for drunk driving because I don't even drink. But I have to submit to these audits, these roadside audits. And, you know, this is really, I think, the slippery slope where we started losing our freedoms quite some time ago in the name of drunk driver arrests. You know, if we submit to any kind of traffic stop that they want to set up as we're just going about our business, and they have absolutely no reasonable cause to think that we're drunk, then it's a short step from that to the types of things that we're seeing in the airports, the TSA, where everybody is presumed to be guilty until you prove your innocence to them with a unconstitutional search. Along those lines, the TSA is now seeking permission to conduct security assessments on highways. Yes, that's right. They're not going to limit themselves just to airports. Remember, they're the transportation Security Administration. Right there, that tells you they're not the Airport Security Administration. And they've already been moving these things out. In the last year, in Paul Watson's article, I think he said they had 9,000 checkpoints across the United States on highways just this last year. And they're looking to expand that. And as part of this security assessment, they're going to go in and take a look at what things they could do to improve security on, get this list, 140 highways as well as 140 other public transportation hubs, including bus depots, train stations, cable cars, inclined planes, funiculars, automated guideways. Have they left anything out? I can't think of anything. Maybe tricycles. I don't know. But it's pretty amazing. And under the VIPR program, that's the Visible Intermodal Prevention and Response. Now, isn't that a phony acronym, if you ever heard one? You know, that they just wanted to put something there that had a snake because they probably have a great logo. Well, you know, we have a snake logo that I like. It's the Don't Tread on Me snake. They need to remember that. Well, as the TSA is working on creating, I guess, their no-drive list, equivalent to the no-fly list, ask yourself, are you on their naughty or their nice list? They're now creating and maintaining a watch list of Americans who violate their policies. Now, remember, this isn't people who are violating laws. These are people who are violating TSA policies. Well, the TSA is already on my list of people who violate the Constitution. And they've got, as part of this program, it's the TSA pre-check. And they've actually trademarked their little logo there that they've got. And it says, as Homeland Security notes, that as part of the effort to identify individuals that are low risk, TSA is also screening and maintaining a watch list of individuals who are disqualified from eligibility from TSA pre-check for some period of time or permanently because they've been involved in violations of security regulations of sufficient severity or frequency. That's right. They're creating a nice list as well as a naughty list. Well, how is that really going to work? We already know the government has a couple of lists that they're keeping. One of those, of course, is the no-fly list. And we've seen how the no-fly list works. We've seen people like Wade Hicks, who was stopped halfway in his journey from California to Japan to see his wife. He was booted off the plane in Hawaii in spite of the fact that he had been thoroughly vetted by the TSA as part of their Transportation Worker Identity Card program. He had also just recently been cleared by the FBI for enhanced extended concealed carry. He had no criminal record, but his case is not unique. We see that happening to children and to babies and to people who work for American Airlines all the time. You know, we see these types of cases. Now, that's just the no-fly list. There's also a terrorist watch list that reportedly now has over a million names on it. And the TSA has admitted to the fact that most of these lists, most of the people on these lists are there incorrectly, that they're false positives, essentially. Now, the thing that's really annoying about this and very dangerous for all of us is that, as in the case of Wade Hicks, as in the case of everybody who's on the no-fly list, you don't know that you're on the no-fly list. No formal charges are ever given to you. You're not notified that you've been put on the list. You're just secretly charged with something and secretly punished, and you find out about it only when you begin your journey or, in the case of Wade Hicks, when you're in the middle of the journey. But this is also, it's interesting to look at, recent revelations show that anyone can print out a boarding pass and alter just one number on it to make it appear that they're enrolled in the pre-check. And it goes to show that the program is just another layer of security theater. It's intrinsically flawed, and it threatens to make flying less safe because it gives us all a false sense of security, not only about flying, but it gives us a false sense of security to think that we live in a government that is completely different from what it really is. It's really a government that is disregarding the rule of law and using every opportunity to collect information and spy on its citizens. Well, we have a little bit of light news here in the entertainment area. Zero Dark Thirty was named today by the New York Film Critics Circle as the best film of the year. And so we have a sneak preview of that movie as well as some comments from Melissa Melton.
I'm Melissa Melton reporting for InfoWars Nightly News. Zero Dark Thirty, the film supposedly based on the true story official accounts of the killing of Osama bin Laden, is set to release in U.S. theaters December 19th.
We are still no closer to defeating our enemy. 20 detainees recognize that photo.
In analyzing the clip you just saw, Jessica Chastain stars as CIA operative Maya, a woman obsessed with capturing the man supposedly behind the September 11th terrorist attacks. The New York Film Critics Guide was apparently so moved, they named Zero Dark Thirty Film of the Year. Now let's analyze a clip of actual Osama bin Laden raid footage.
InfoWars.com has acquired this official White House-approved raid footage. So we bring to you now the world premiere of the Osama bin Laden raid.
Actually, we can't be sure if that's legitimate footage or not. You see, so much misinfo and disinfo came out in the wake of the raid that it's really hard to understand what's real or what's not anymore. And really, shouldn't the makers of Zero Dark Thirty be concerned about the same thing?
If you'll recall, Osama bin Laden was supposedly taken down in a raid at a compound in Abbottabad in 2011.
The death of bin Laden marks the most significant achievement to date in our nation's effort to defeat al-Qaeda.
President Obama addressed the nation late Sunday evening to say that just hours before, Osama bin Laden had been killed in the middle of a major populated city in a palace compound. My friends, this is a complete and total hoax, and we predicted with total precision, with inside sources, going back more than 8 years ago, exactly what would happen.
And then bin Laden's body was buried at sea, all within 24 hours after the raid. Our government claimed his burial was per Islamic tradition. But many Muslim scholars have come forward to point out that this, like so much else in the official story, is false. Over the years, many people, from intelligence analysts to heads of state, including former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto, and former FBI head of counterterrorism Dale Watson, have gone on record to say that bin Laden died in 2001. Dr. Steve Pichinik, who has worked with five different U.S. presidents and the Department of Defense, has even come out to say that Osama bin Laden died in 2001 of Marfan syndrome, a degenerative genetic disease with no permanent cure.
With the intel, with the CIA reports you were reading, with as much proof as you can give us without giving up your sources of knowing that bin Laden was dead and when he reportedly died, so that we can look at the big news story now in context of why they've launched this hoax today.
Well, let me just say, the issue of why he was dead was exactly what I said before. He died of Marfan syndrome. Bush Jr. knew about it. The intelligence community knew about it. He had Al-Zawahiri, who was a physician with him, who is still a physician. I don't know where he is. But we knew he was already dead by 9/11.
In fact, two separate high-level sources have told Alex Jones directly that not only was bin Laden dead since 2001, but his death would not be announced until the most politically opportune moment.
This all came out right at the time that Obama's approval rating was dropping like a rock, an all-time low this far into a president's administration, as the dollar's dropping, as support for Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, and drone attacks in Pakistan was imploding, right as the Pakistanis were threatening to kick the U.S. out of Pakistan and to kick their drones out. Right as this happens, there's this big propaganda victory, and what do? They take the body and throw it in the ocean, they say. Do you really believe that? No one is buying that.
When the announcement finally came that Osama bin Laden was dead, the White House changed its story so many times, it was hard to keep anything straight.
First, the raid involved a 40-minute shootout. Then there was no shootout. Then only one unnamed man was armed. Then bin Laden was armed. Then he wasn't armed, and it was reported that he used his wife as a human shield. To go along with the ever-changing official story, the White House also released a Situation Room photo depicting a grave President Obama and Hillary Clinton with her hand over her mouth, supposedly watching the bin Laden raid live. But CIA Director Leon Panetta later admitted that wasn't possible, as the live feed had been cut before the Navy SEAL team even went in.
Speaking of the Navy SEALs that carried out the raid, controversy intensified when our government announced that some members of SEAL Team 6 responsible for the raid died in a helicopter crash 2 months later.
I have two sources inside the Army, and I have another source inside the Marines, a colonel, who have confirmed and talked to members of the family of SEAL Team 6 that supposedly was shot down a few days ago over Kabul, Afghanistan, that they were killed to shut them up about what they know about the staged raid on Osama bin Laden's compound.
In the wake of the raid, Disney even tried to copyright the name Navy SEAL Team 6. The Situation Room photo wasn't the only photo proven a fraud either. A photograph the media pounced all over in the days following the raid, reportedly of bin Laden's body, was also shown to be a manipulated fake. Multiple books were also released following the raid. The latest one published by a Navy SEAL who claimed his work was a first-hand, boots-on-the-ground account and that he witnessed bin Laden's death with his own eyes. The publisher even claimed the book was not vetted by the Pentagon. But as we witnessed with the arrest and detainment of Brandon Robb, release of an unapproved book of this magnitude would garner a full-scale assault on its author. So let's recap. 10 years later, and the greatest manhunt in history, as the movie puts it, and we finally caught and killed the man responsible for one of the greatest crimes ever committed on U.S. soil, and yet we have no valid photographs and no conclusive proof.
If you want a conspiracy theory to exist, that's how you start it. Like, the most elusive character on the face of the planet, the most elusive human being, the Bigfoot of people. And you catch him and kill him, but yeah, we chucked him in the drink right away because we didn't want any more problems.
The latest news to break on the bin Laden raid came a few weeks ago when heavily redacted emails obtained through an Associated Press FOIA request revealed that no American sailors aboard the USS Carl Vinton had witnessed bin Laden's sea burial. Another email from the public affairs officer claimed that only a small group of the ship's leadership were even informed of the burial.
Though the release of Zero Dark Thirty was delayed until after the presidential election, supposedly to ward off accusations of a political agenda, with a mountain of evidence showing we've never been given the full story here, it's hard to think this movie has anything but a political agenda. So much propaganda was released following the bin Laden raid, it's unclear what really happened. But saying this movie is based on a true story is a lot like saying Winnie the Pooh is based on a real-life bear named Winifred and a real-life little boy named Christopher Robin. And yet, I've never seen one talking tiger in real life. For InfoWars Nightly News, I'm Melissa Melton.
Well, thanks, Melissa. Those clips make it look like a real, enticing, high-budget movie. Have to go see that. Well, think about how upset cops get when you film them. And think about the fact that they're constantly filming us from every angle, from every place that they can think of. But that's just not enough. When you've got an insatiable appetite to know everything about everybody, you've got to get their text messages as well. Now cops are telling Congress, we need logs of Americans' text messages. Yes, state and local law enforcement groups are now lobbying Congress to force cell phone providers to keep archives for at least 2 years of all text messages. CNET, in this article here, has learned that what they call a constellation of law enforcement groups is asking for this. Now, to give you an idea of what they're pushing this for, in a recent court opinion in Rhode Island, they were upset about the fact that they could not get information or evidence from T-Mobile because T-Mobile did not store that information. They were investigating a crime. They got a court order for that, but they were not able to get it because T-Mobile just doesn't store that. And it turns out that most cell phone providers do not. They actually have a list in the article here that says Sprint stores their text messages going back 12 days, Nextel for 7 days, AT&T and Singular don't preserve content at all. So now you might take that in consideration when you're considering who your cell phone provider should be. But really, do they need that information? I mean, isn't that what we're building the multi-billion-dollar data center in Utah for? We've got the largest data center in the world that is storing everything about everybody, not just American citizens, everybody in the entire world. We have a government that is just beyond what anybody could imagine in terms of trying to catalog what people are doing. It's way beyond anything Orwell imagined in 1984. This article goes on to point out these data retention policies serve one purpose, and that is to require companies to keep databases of their customers so law enforcement can fish for evidence. And this would seem to be done against the wishes of providers, presumably since the providers, most of them, don't keep these messages at all. I guess we have to ask, who watches the watchers? Well, we watch the watchers with our video cameras and with our drones. Yes, that's right. Drone mob is coming to Austin. And if you don't know what that is, take a look at hashtag drone mob or go to the Infowars.com website. It's coming up this Saturday in Austin at Zilker Park. And if you can't see it, there'll be some footage captured afterwards. But if you can make it by, come by. And we've got Jakari Jackson telling us a little bit about that. Here's Jakari.
I'm Jakari Jackson for the InfoWars Nightly News, bringing you our drone minutes, because remember, we're having our drone mob December 8th right here in Austin, Texas. We have an article headline, Drone Plans Mired in Privacy Issues. Frustrated commercial drone companies say the Obama administration has fallen further and further behind in meeting congressional demands to clear a path for full integration into America airspace by 2015. Industry leaders argue that the FAA has missed the mark by focusing too much on privacy and Fourth Amendment concerns associated with drones and instead should return to its core mission of maintaining safety in the nation's skies. I don't see how privacy and security are mutually exclusive, but according to these industry insiders, I guess they see that as the case. Now, be sure to join us December 8th at Zilker Park right here in Austin, Texas, for our first ever drone mob and video contest. There will be a $1,000 prize for the best video shot at the event and uploaded to YouTube, so be sure to stay on Infowars.com and also check out hashtag drone mob for more details. Now, if you want to meet us out at Zilker Park, be sure to be there at 11 a.m. Bring your drones, your spy planes, your small remote-controlled helicopters, whatever you have, and we just want to make the notion that we don't want our own weapons turned against us. I'm Jakari Jackson for the Infowars Nightly News.
Well, thanks, Jakari. And don't forget, everybody, that's this Saturday in Austin at Zilker Park. That's the end of the news, and here's our quote for the day. A man may die, nations may rise and fall, but an idea lives on. John F. Kennedy. Well, what idea are we interested in promoting here at InfoWars? It's liberty. Well, if you want to help us fund that fight for liberty, go to PrisonPlanet.tv. Pick up a subscription there for yourself, for your friends, for your family. Help educate people that you know. And you can also help us by going to InfoWarsShop.com. As you can see there, the new magazine has just come out, the one with Obama on the cover, This Man Wants Your Guns. Well, it's not just him. It's spread out throughout the popular culture, as we saw this weekend with Bob Costas and the NFL. They want to get your guns, too, the mainstream media. But we're trying to help fight to keep the Second Amendment in place. Help us fund the First Amendment here at InfoWars.com.
Recently, the Harvard School of Health looked at more than a dozen scientific studies concerning fluoride and confirmed what countless other scientists have been documenting for decades. Sodium fluoride in the body reduces IQ and increases cancers. You see, the aluminum industry and the fertilizer industries would have to pay to store all the toxic waste they produce. But instead, they get our counties and cities to pay to put the poison in our water. It's not just fluoride we're getting, but lead, mercury, arsenic. The list goes on. And a lot of this toxic waste comes from China. Unfortunately, fluoride and its derivatives are only one of hundreds of toxins being added to our drinking water. We're battling the globalists on so many fronts. Health is an area where we can all take control of our lives, and it all starts with that basic building block of water. It is time to purify our family's water. The ProPure filtration system with added fluoride filters is the best system from my research to protect you and your family. InfoWarsStore.com already has the lowest prices on ProPure water filtration. But until December 10th, we are going to offer 15% off the already lowest price. I know what I'm giving my family this Christmas. ProPure. Go to InfoWarsStore.com and get 15% off the already lowest price out there with the code WATER15. WATER15 and you get 15% off at InfoWarsStore.com.
As Skynet continues to rise, most Americans have no idea the arsenal their own government is prepared to use against them. walking weapons and unmanned drones that will find their way to U.S. soil if they haven't already. But the future is not written in stone. Join InfoWars for the first ever drone mob December 8th at Zilker Park in Austin, Texas. This family-friendly event is to inform the public of the weapons that target us. Bring your own drones and spy planes as we make the statement that we don't want our weapons turned against us. Be there at 11 a.m. There will be some amazing giveaways and even a video contest. So bring your camera, because whoever films the best drone video at the event and posts it up on YouTube will receive 1,000 Federal Reserve notes. And be sure to use the hashtag Drone Mob on Twitter and visit InfoWars.com for more details.
Alex Jones here with some very important breaking news. The latest edition of InfoWars magazine, December 2012, is out. And no, we don't really cover people that think that the world is going to end on December 21st. We are predicting the world will not end. But we are predicting that the end of our free republic may take place if people don't wake up and get aggressive and angry and speak out against what's happening. This man wants your guns. That is the cover of the 60-page glossy magazine, jam-packed with information and the truth. And you know what they say, the truth will set you free. You can buy the magazine at cost in bulk in groups of 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, right up to 100 to give everyone you know. And believe me, people will open this up. It is full of unbelievably powerful graphics, cartoons. We've got artist profiles on patriots out there that are exposing the globalists. And it's got several articles breaking down the facts that Obama and his globalist controllers want to disarm the American people and are going to try to ban all semi-autos. The facts are in this magazine, and this is the most important of the four issues we have ever put out. And when you do sign up for the subscription, you don't just get 12 in the mail. When supplies last of the previous issues, we will put back issues like the November issue, Zombies, Are You a Zombie?, breaking down how television has put the general public into a trance-like state. You will get that when you sign up for the next 12 issues in December of 2012. My goal is to expose the globalist and to win the info war so it doesn't become a physical war. We've seen Hillary Clinton saying that they're winning the info war. Top globalist Zbigniew Brzezinski says that nationalism is growing and that people are waking up against outside forces because of populism and alternative media. This particular issue of the magazine is the one to give friends and family. It's the one to put under the tree or in the stocking. It's the one to leave at church. It's the one to leave at the dentist office. This is the one, the December issue of InfoWars magazine with Ron Paul, the attack on the Second Amendment, the police state, the GMO takeover. It's all there and all available at InfoWarsStore.com or by calling 888-253-3139. Get your subscription or buy the magazines in bulk today. I'm Alex Jones signing off for InfoWars.com. Until next time, remember, if you're watching this, if you're receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back. Now, coming up, we've got part two of the interview that Ben Fuchs did with Dr. Joel Wallach. And this installment, Dr. Wallach talks about how he made some of his discoveries and the implications those discoveries have on your daily breakfast.
Today, the cutting edge in science and in genetics is not genetics at all, it's epigenetics, mm-hmm. correct? So what you were doing 30 years ago
was epigenetics.
Yes. I wonder if you could tell the folks a little bit about the whole idea of epigenetics, how epigenetics relates to genetics, and how nutrition relates to epigenetics.
Well, you have to appreciate how the medical mind thinks, pharmacist Ben. You know this, being a pharmacist. But for our viewers here, the medical mind is that they get a theory, and everything belongs to that theory. For instance, back in the days of the cavemen, there were witch doctors and shamans. Everything was caused by evil spirits.
Right.
And then there was alchemists, and it had to do with
distillation,
turning lead into gold, and all that kind of stuff, and sprinkling.
If all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And then it went into spontaneous generation, because they didn't know about germs yet, and they thought that life spontaneously generated from nothing. And then along came Van Leeuwenhoek, the Dutch, he was actually a spectacle maker, made eyeglasses, and he
invented the microscope.
Yeah, but he put two lenses instead of one lens for your right eye, one lens for your left eye. He put one lens on top of the other.
Made a compound lens.
Yeah, made a compound microscope, and he looked at pond water. He sees all these little animals floating around. He writes it up. Well, Pasteur he's a guy who's working on wine, trying to keep it from going sour and going to vinegar.
Yeah.
And that's what he came up with, pasteurization.
Yeast. He was studying yeast.
Yeah, he was studying yeast, exactly. And so once he learned that it was a living thing, he couldn't see it because he didn't have a microscope. Once he had a microscope, he could see the little yeast buds and budding and growing.
So Pasteur was a contemporary.
Oh, yeah, of Van Leeuwenhoek.
Okay.
Yep. And he immediately knew that spontaneous generation was not the thing. He knew things were caused by these germs. That's where the germ theory came from. And then, of course, he was the first one to actually practically make vaccines, although there was a medical doctor in England by the name of Jenner who was involved.
Got a smallpox guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so when you had Pasteur, he took 25 sheep in the center of Paris. He set up pens, artificial pens or temporary pens. He had 25 sheep that he vaccinated for anthrax. He had 25 sheep he didn't. He gave anthrax to all 50. And the ones that were vaccinated, 24 of them survived, and one died. And the ones that didn't have vaccinated, they all died. And so the press was there, and it was everybody agreed that he knew the answer to anthrax. And so the medical system couldn't argue with it because the press had already made it a fait accompli, right? And then comes along Mendel and Darwin, right? And Darwin's talking about how things evolve in the Galapagos Islands, and he'd see all these different finches, which are really the same species, but they had different colors and different beaks, but they're the same species. And that's because it took a little adaption in each of the different islands to survive, the predators and things.
That's where he came up with the theory of evolution, by watching the finches?
Well, watching the finches.
Uh-huh.
That's where he got that idea. And he knew there was something being passed on from one generation, because they could, the ones who were successful had some adaption, right? That was the word, adaption. And the ones that couldn't adapt got eaten by the predators.
This is the beginnings of the genetics theory.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
Something being passed on, some information passed on from parent to offspring.
Exactly. And then here's Mendel, who's this monk, right? And he's growing peas, and he's studying peas, which the monks love to eat. And he was studying which he could get the best peas. And he learned that there was something being passed on. The color of the pea, flowers, and the whether they're wrinkled or smooth, or they're big or they're small, and he could pass on these traits. And so he talked about threads, and he knew that something was being passed on.
He literally said threads?
Mm-hmm. He said threads are being passed on, threads of life are being passed on, carrying information was his words.
Wow.
We're talking about in the early 1800s, yeah. And so that was the beginning of the genetic theory. Well, along comes people like Linus Pauling and Watson and Crick, and they were able to actually tell you the structure of a chromosome and so forth and double helix and how traits like eye color and skin color and hair color are being passed on and so forth.
Linus Pauling was in on the whole genetic thing as well.
Well, he was actually the first one. He was actually cheated. He should have actually gotten part of that Nobel Prize that Watson and Crick did, because he came up with the helix
He
proposed that 10 years before they came along. They were just in their 20s, and he proposed it 10 years earlier.
Wow.
But they were actually able to do it and show it. But so he really should have gotten some part of that Nobel Prize, but he didn't. But at any rate, then along comes all the genome thing, right? So then, suddenly now genetics is going to solve everything.
Right.
They're just every right. time they have a new theory, it solves everything.
Right.
Okay, and of course the genetic theory was fought for a long time, just like the Earth is flat theory was tried to be defended by the holders of that theory until Columbus came along, who was an ignorant Portuguese seaman, right?
He said the Earth was not flat.
He's the guy sailing out there. He knew the Earth wasn't flat. And so it comes down to perceptions and what you know and so forth. They were limited. So at any rate, my revelation, if you will, back when I was 9 years old, the diseases could be caused by nutritional deficiency. I learned everything I could about nutrition. Of course, in agriculture school, we learned that we could prevent and cure as many as 900 different diseases in animals with nutrition that in medical school they tell them are genetic.
Did you know that there was it was really a nutritional and epigenetic component, that the nutrition was actually changing the genes?
Yes. Well, no, we didn't have the word epigenetic at that time.
Did you know nutrition was changing the genes, though, that lack of nutrition was affecting the genetics?
And now that's a better word, affecting. Okay, they weren't changing the genes.
Affecting
because the genes are like a factory. The chromosomes are like a factory. Can you build any factory without raw materials or parts?
No.
Without labors and energy?
Of course not. No.
Okay, so a gene and a chromosome is the same way. It's just a blueprint.
Right.
A gene and a chromosome is just a blueprint,
right.
Nothing else. So you
right.
put a gene and a chromosome in a bucket of saline and say, okay, come on, boys, go to work and make something. Ain't nothing happening.
Right.
You still
the gene that makes protein, the blueprint is just there to make the protein. You still need the raw materials to make the protein.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so we learned in agricultural school that we could prevent and cure every disease you can think of. We can prevent and cure, we can prevent every birth defect. Many of them you could cure. Some of them, like cleft palate, is a surgical case, right? And, for instance, congestive heart failure, the most common cause of heart disease, a death in adults in America, deficiency of a single vitamin. In fact, when I went to the next thing after the foxes in the Brookfield Zoo, the Shedd Aquarium there in Chicago, they called me over and said, hey, we hear you're wanting to do autopsies on some cetaceans, which are whales and dolphins and things. I said, yep. They said, well, we got a freshwater dolphin here from the Ganges River in India, just died, and we get 10 or 12 of them every year and in the spring, and by the fall they're all dead. This is pretty typical. Why don't you give us your thoughts what's happening here? So I go over there and cut that thing open. First thing, I knew immediately what it was. Because the heart of a 300-pound freshwater dolphin is as big as your fist. This dolphin's heart was as big as a basketball. He died of congestive heart failure, which is a deficiency of a single vitamin. So I said, are you giving these dolphins any vitamins? No, we're feeding them whole fish. They eat fish, so we just give them whole fish. I said, tell me what species of fish, because there are certain fish in their tissues, they have an enzyme that kills that vitamin.
You're not talking about vitamin C.
No. Thiamine.
Thiaminase.
There's a thiaminase in the tissue of smelt. They're feeding because of the size. The smelt was the perfect food from size standpoint for these freshwater dolphins.
They didn't have any thiamine.
They didn't have any thiamine because they weren't putting a multiple and extra thiamine in the mouth of those fish when they fed them to the little freshwater dolphins. So, told them to change the type of fish they were feeding them, give them a multiple and some extra B vitamins with a lot of thiamine. Stop the deaths in the freshwater dolphins at Shedd Aquarium. And so these are the things I could do with nutrition. And here's all these biologists. I mean, these guys are very skilled, very well-trained biologists when it came to behavior of the animals and their dynamics in captivity and so on, and how they reacted for territories with one male against the other, that kind of stuff.
Behavioralists.
Yeah, exactly.
But they weren't biochemists. They were biologists, but they weren't biochemists.
Yeah. And so I could come in and see something very simple that I've been studying for 10, 15, 20 years and see it in a heartbeat, where they could look at it and they couldn't recognize it.
Now, thiamine is a fascinating vitamin.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beriberi vitamin.
Exactly.
That's the vitamin that they were given. Tell the story about the chickens and the rice polishings.
Well, beriberi is a very interesting disease. Sailors, of course, used to die from this by the thousands every year. And as they went around the world and their sea voyages were longer and longer and longer, more and more sailors, I mean, two-thirds of the crew would be death from beriberi by the time they came home, particularly as time went along, because they demanded modern food. And modern food to them meant polished rice, white rice instead of brown rice, because that's what rich people ate, and so they wanted that as part of their demand. If we're going to go on this long sea voyage, we want polished rice. Okay, and two-thirds of the crew would die from beriberi. Well, first of all, they get a dementia called Korsakoff syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
Which is caused by a thiamine deficiency. Yeah. And then they would get congestive heart failure.
It's like a cure for Korsakoff syndrome is thiamine.
People in a week.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing, right?
But I give them 26,000 times the minimum daily requirement. I hedge my bet, right? Okay, so at any rate, all these diseases that these Japanese naval surgeons were really the first ones to recognize there's some problem here when they fed these sailors this polished rice. But the Admiralty, you know, the big guys up there, the Admiralty, well, listen, these guys are demanding this. This has nothing to do with it. It's got to be some bug. They thought it was a bug.
Wow. What year are we talking here?
We're talking about the late 1700s.
Wow.
Okay, in the 18th century. And Europeans get the credit for discovering it, but it was really these Japanese naval surgeons.
It was a Polish chemist.
Kaiser Funk.
Yeah. Came
was
up
his
time.
Name, yeah. But, well, he actually identified it. But before that, the Japanese naval surgeons.
There was something in there.
They knew there was something in the bran of the rice, in the brown covering, the hull on the rice could prevent and reverse that disease. And they would all die of congestive heart failure, but they would all go crazy. They'd lose their minds. Korsakoff syndrome.
Yeah.
Before they die of congestive
alcohol, people who drink alcohol, that deactivates thiamine somehow.
Well, sure. Well, alcohol is a liquid sugar, and it makes
thiamine's used for metabolizing the alcohol.
And so when you take in sugar or alcohol,
yeah. It
makes a deficiency worse.
Talk about ADD, maybe. How about B1 deficiency, subclinical B1 deficiency for kids who have ADD? They're eating sugar. Maybe they don't need Ritalin. Maybe they need something like thiamine. Or how about subclinical issues? You know, we talk about the big things like congestive heart failure and beriberi, but what are the impacts of subclinical thiamine deficiency where maybe they're just not getting enough thiamine? What are the impacts on our kids?
Okay, well, that's a good one. Let's talk about ADD, ADHD, autism. Now, back when I was a kid, there was no such thing as those things, right? In the year 1980. In 1980, it was one out of 150,000 kids had autism. In the year 2000, it's one out of 150. Today, it's one out of 88 is the new. It just came out last week.
Wow.
One out of 88 now has autism.
Wow.
And basically, when I was a kid, all four of my grandparents were from Eastern Europe. They were beet farmers and beef farmers. And so for breakfast, I would have cheese and beets and beef and eggs and...
No Cheerios?
No.
No cornflakes?
No. Not when I was a little baby. Nope. And we didn't have those types of diseases. Well, here comes now, 20 years later, kids are being fed on these box cereals full of processed carbohydrates with sugar on it, and they're getting apple juice.
Right.
How can you build a brain, which is two-thirds by weight, 75% by weight, is cholesterol and good fats? Okay? And so now all they're getting is carbohydrates and sugar, and they're going crazy.
Right. So not only are they deficient, but it's costing them nutrients to process all that stuff.
Exactly. So it makes the nutritional deficiencies
worse. Even worse, right.
Right. And so simply, I take kids that haven't spoken in 11 years. You start feeding them eggs. You get them on the 90 essential nutrients, which is what we feed animals, the 90 essential nutrients, 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 essential amino acids, 3 essential fatty acids. And after 11 years of not speaking, I have kids who can read the Bible out loud in churches.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Doc, I say this on my radio show all the time. I say, you're going to think it's a miracle, but it's not a miracle. This is the way the body works because you give the body what it needs and it will respond. This amazing system. This amazing divine system.
Well, that's the end of our broadcast. I'm David Knight. Please join us tomorrow on the InfoWars Nightly News.